Today is a little bit of a unusual procedure because once we get deeper into the term, this is true for lecture as well. Lectures have been a little bit unusual because once we get deeper into the term, what we do really for the rest of the term in 201 and 202 is one organ system at a time survey the body. But we're not doing that today. We're not paying really any attention to specific functions or anatomy of specific organs or organ systems. What we really care about today are general terminology, is general terminology. So really today is a bunch of words that you have to know. Now, that you are looking at some organs, but really it's not about what that organ does today. It's really just about what words do you use to describe where that organ is in relation to other organs, for instance, or just by itself in the body. So it's a bunch of terminology. And I'm going to go through the most general of those and then let you loose on the more specific terms to learn today before you leave. I'll start with the anatomical position. There is an official anatomical position for any species. And it's, for a human, it's standing as you see in the picture in the manual, like I'm standing right now, with palms facing forward, my upper limbs stretched out, lower limbs spaced roughly even with my hips, and my face pointing forward. And ideally I would be naked, but you just have to imagine that. So the reason the anatomical position is important is not because a body is very often in the anatomical position. Usually it's not, right? But you need to know what that official anatomical position is, because when we use all these words that you're learning tonight to describe relationships between structures, those are all based on or in reference to the anatomical position. For instance, if I stand on my head, that does not mean for that moment the skull is inferior to the feet. Because it doesn't matter what the position I put my body in, you have to imagine the body in the anatomical position. The skull is always superior to the feet because it is in the anatomical position. So that's why it's important. Other species have different anatomical positions. For instance, the dog's anatomical position, since it's not a bipedal organism, but it's quadruped, walks on 4 feet, is just what you would think, a dog standing in its natural position. And that means that some of the terminology changes when you apply it to a dog versus a human, as I'll talk about in a minute. But that's our anatomical position, and I want to go through the three anatomical planes of dissection. Now, there's really three categories of planes of dissection, but there are infinitely many planes of dissection. Four categories, really, because there are oblique planes. That's at any odd angle. But there's three special angles, right? And these planes are mutually orthogonal. What that means is that each plane is perpendicular to the other two types of planes. And so another way of saying that is that they correspond to the X, Y, and Z axes of a three-dimensional Cartesian system, three-dimensional graph, basically. So one of these categories is represented by the page I'm holding right now. This is a plane, right? And there are infinitely many of these planes because it could go anywhere through the depth of my body. But notice they're all parallel to each other when I do this. So any of the planes that are parallel to this page I'm holding can go by either of two names. You can call that the frontal plane or a frontal plane, or coronal. Coronal is an adjective that means like a crown. Well, the reason it gets that name is because of what's called the coronal suture, on the skull, which we'll study later. But this is the coronal suture because it's shaped like a tiara. It looks like a little crown. And therefore, the plane of dissection that largely goes through that was called the coronal plane. That's why it's an alternative name. Frontal, coronal are interchangeable, though. Choose one that you want to use, and either one is fine. So there are infinitely many coronal planes. But no matter which one that you think of, a coronal plane will always divide the body into an anterior portion and a posterior portion. It divides anterior from posterior. Anterior and posterior are antonymous. They are opposite in meaning. Anterior always means toward the front of the organism, its front. So the direction we walk in, for instance, is anterior. And it is for a dog as well. Anterior is toward the front. Posterior is toward the back. Or by back, I mean the rear. All right? I say that because the back, what we call the back of a dog, is actually the top of the animal, right? If we call this surface the back. The dog has a back and a rear, which are different from each other. For us, the back and the rear are the same direction. So, coronal plane always divides anterior from posterior. Another plane, which is, like I said, at perpendicular to that, would be this one, if I hold this page horizontally. And there are infinitely many of those that are all parallel to each other. What kind of plane is this? Transverse plane. Remember from today that transverse means across the length, not along the length, but across the length. And so a transverse plane, whichever one you choose, always separates superior from inferior. Superior always means away from gravity. Inferior means toward gravity. Okay. And then the third one, which is perpendicular to both of those other ones, so if I hold it this way, infinitely many of those as well, that one's called a sagittal section, often misspelled. Sagittal has one G, two T's, not the reverse. And the sagitt part of that word means arrow, so sagittal means arrow-like. Once again, the skull is useful here. In a newborn skull, the ossification of the cranium hasn't completed, so there are so-called soft spots, which are properly called fontanelles. And the shape of the soft spots in a newborn make this whole area look like an arrow. That's why this suture is called the sagittal suture. And once again, the plane of dissection that goes through that is therefore called a sagittal plane. Well, unlike the other two kinds of planes, sagittal planes include one special case, and that's because humans have bilateral symmetry, at least superficially. Right? We're bilaterally symmetrical only at our surface, really. You get into the deepness, there's not a right and a left kidney, for instance. So our surface is roughly bilaterally symmetrical based on the axis of symmetry, which is along our long axis. And therefore, what I'm trying to say is, if you think of a transverse plane, that a transverse plane doesn't divide me into two symmetrical parts, and a coronal plane does not separate me into, you know, the front and the back are not symmetrical. But if I take a sagittal plane that happens to fall right exactly on the midline, that is a special case, because it'll divide it into symmetrical halves. And therefore, that one plane of the infinitely many sagittal planes gets the special name, actually two alternative names. It used to be called the mid-sagittal plane, and still is by some people. But it's anatomists decided they needed to change the name to median plane, which really just means the same thing. So median plane or mid-sagittal plane both describe that one sagittal plane right down the middle. Any other sagittal plane, little bit off center, is called a parasagittal plane. So there's two types of sagittal planes. Now, sagittal, you know, the other two things separated something from something else. A sagittal plane does the same thing. Sagittal plane separates right from left, a right portion from a left portion. In the case of the mid-sagittal plane, it's a right half from a left half. But anything that's parasagittal, it's not going to be halves. It's going to be some other fractions, right? But it's still right and left. And it might seem like I don't have to tell you what right and left mean, but people confuse this all the time. It's right. It's the right part of that organism. It's that organism's right or that organism's left, which if you are facing that organism is going to be on your opposite, right? This is the left hand on me. Whether it's on your left or on your right as you view me, it's my right. So make sure you realize that when you're looking at models or whatever. Okay, so we've already had a few opposite pairs, right and left, anterior, posterior, superior and inferior. There are other pairs of antonyms. For instance, ventral and dorsal. Ventral is the adjective of the word venter. The venter is the belly surface of an organism. And here's where species matters, because for us, ventral corresponds to what directional term? What is it? Anterior and ventral are in the same direction for a human. But for a dog, ventral is what? Inferior, right, because they stand with their belly facing the ground. Dorsal, or the dorsum, dorsal is just the adjective of dorsum, that's the surface that features the spine, which is why, you know, on a shark, we call that the dorsal fin. That dorsal fin is superiorly situated because of the anatomical position of a shark. But for us, dorsal corresponds to posterior. There's also cranial and caudal. Cranial means toward the head. Caudal means toward the tail. Caudus means tail. And superficial and deep are opposites of each other. Superficial means closer to the surface, the outer surface, which I guess is the surface, and deep is underlying compared to that other structure. And by the way, these words are all relative. For instance, you wouldn't say that any individual organ is deep. That doesn't make any sense. That's like saying, this price is more. That sentence doesn't make sense by itself, right? Because more is a comparative term. You have to say this price is more than that price. So there's no absolutely deep structure. We call a structure either deep or superficial compared to another structure. So, for example, the skin is superficial to the muscles, skeletal muscles. Correspondingly, the skeletal muscles are deep to the skin. But at the same time the skeletal muscles are deep to the skin, they are superficial to the bones. The bones are deeper still. So it just depends on what comparison is made as to what word you use. And another pair of opposites is distal and proximal. Distal, same root as in distance, right? Meaning far. Proximal, same root as approximate or proximity, right? If something is in my proximity, it's close to me. If you say that something is approximately such and such, that means close to it. So these two words are not really used to compare structures that are part of the trunk or the torso. Instead, they're used to compare parts of limbs. Except the exception to that is parts of the torso that are passageways, like the alimentary canal, otherwise known as the digestive tract, We could say, for instance, that the large intestine is distal to the small intestine because as stuff passes through, it passes through the small intestine first and then it gets to the large intestine. But usually we're talking about two structures on a limb somewhere. And the basis for deciding which word is to use is closeness of the attachment point of that limb to the torso. For instance, this is my upper limb. This is not my arm, by the way. My arm is just part of my upper limb. In everyday speech, we might think of this whole thing as the arm, but anatomically, the arm is officially just from shoulder to elbow. This is my arm only. I mean, only this is my arm. This is my forearm, not my arm. This is my wrist. This is my hand. Those are all part of the limb. Similarly, this whole lower limb is not my leg. The leg is just from knee to ankle. From hip to knee is thigh, another part of the limb. But anyway, back to the proximal and distal, an example of the use of those is to say that my elbow is distal to my shoulder. But at the same time, my elbow is proximal to my wrist, right? It's still comparative. My wrist is farther away from the attachment point of that limb to the torso. That's how they're used. Any questions on any of that? Okay, so notice that you're supposed to be doing, I guess, the first two chapters of the manual, except for the rat stuff in two. So you have a bunch of stuff to basically look at and memorize these terms. Every week, I already have posted on the laboratory exercises site on the website links. Those are just to give you a preview of like the to-do lists and the things to know list. You don't actually have to print those out because those will be in these protected sheets each week. But also, you might have noticed that within the last couple of days, I added to that list and put in links to a website that shows you examples and gives you a way to practice for the practicum. That's a useful website, so make sure you see those new links. But anyway, each week, it's important to look at the syllabus to figure out which parts of which chapters you're responsible for, not only so you know what you're doing, but so that you can prepare for the quiz. And anything that is prescribed in the manual, like I said, is fair game for the quiz, whether I talk about it or not. But I'm going to try to make it as much about what I talk about as possible for the quizzes. So you have to look at a bunch of stuff today. Beyond what I said, those were general terms. The more specific terms have to do with specific parts of the body. And they're mostly just adjectives of the names for parts. Like the name that means leg is crus, C-R-U-S. And the adjective of that is crural, which is why the crural means the leg region of the body, and so on. So that's what this long list of surface anatomy landmarks is, and those are the ones I'm just going to let you figure out on your own. You're still responsible for them all, though. And then you have body regions and body quadrants, which these models are useful for, so just look around and get through it all.